Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'll be addressing the joint legal arguments and those arguments that relate to Baptist Memorial Hospital. Mr. Weiss will be addressing the St. Agnes Memorial Hospital.
Mr. Altman, I'm going to ask you to wait a moment until the activity clears so that we're not distracted from your argument. Thank you.
Your Honor, these cases demonstrate that the Secretary has still failed to fulfill the obligation that this Court recognized in NRA Medicare reimbursement litigation, that hospitals have the right to a reopening and a correction of their disproportionate share hospital adjustments to account for Medicaid-eligible but unpaid days.
For at least 3 years.
Well, Your Honor, it is correct that 1885B, which is the regulation that gives rise to that mandatory reopening, refers to a three-year reopening window. But in this case, at least with respect to Baptist, there was an earlier right of reopening, and that came with the Sixth Circuit Program Memorandum. Also, with respect to the right of reopening that came with 97-2, because of the appeal provision, that...
Well, the district court, with respect to the Sixth Circuit Memorandum, didn't the district court take the position that, although you might be right there, you had an adequate remedy? You could have appealed?
The district court did indicate...
Isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly right.
Yeah, that is correct. The district court is right. So, I mean, even if you're right that the Sixth Circuit Memorandum functioned here like 97-2 functioned in Medicare reimbursement and the other case, then isn't he right that you're not entitled to mandamus?
No, Your Honor.
Why?
And that's because the Sixth Circuit Program Memorandum gave rise to an 1885B mandatory reopening duty.
But his point was you could have appealed that. You not only failed to file appeal, but Baptist abandoned the appeal, right? And that was its remedy at the time, and you can't get mandamus if you have an alternative legal remedy.
Your Honor,
why is the district court wrong about that?
The district court is wrong because under 1885B, there were no administrative prerequisites to relief. And secondly, the relief that the hospital is seeking is reopening. And this court has found, the Secretary has argued, and your home, the Supreme Court case, has indicated as well that reopening decisions are left solely to the discretion of the intermediary and not reviewable by the board. The Secretary has also said in its latest brief that it was free to dispute its obligations as recognized under the Sixth Circuit in any other jurisdiction, and the board is just another jurisdiction. So we know that the appeal would not have gained any results because the Secretary tells us that it would have fought it. The Secretary tells us that reopening was discretionary.
Right, but they might have fought it, but it looked like you had a good case. You had...
Your Honor, it looked like St. Agnes had a good case as well.
Yeah.
When the intermediary reopened it while settling a board appeal after the issuance of 97-2, the intermediary excluded eligible but unpaid days, which is, it only further reinforces this notion that it was futile.
So you have not then filed a new complaint based on the Sixth Circuit
memorandum? Your Honor, we did file a new complaint based on the Sixth Circuit because we wanted to make sure that it was decided on the merits, and it was unclear to us.
And what's the status of that?
It's pending this court's decision.
Why wouldn't it be collaterally estopped?
I think it would be collaterally estopped if this court decides.
Based on the district court, as of now, based on the district court's judgment. You could have raised that. The district court said you could have raised this in your... You could have appealed and had an adequate remedy elsewhere, right?
Yes, sir.
Now you are bringing a case which the district court has already said you could have brought earlier.
Your Honor, the way we read the district court's opinion, the district court said, we're not going to consider the Sixth Circuit argument because it wasn't included in an amended complaint. But just to, for judicial economy.
I understand, but it could have been included in the amended complaint, right?
At the time of the amended complaint, we were not aware of the Sixth Circuit program memorandum. We learned about the Sixth Circuit program memorandum after the defendant had moved to dismiss. Mm-hmm. We asked for discovery. Discovery was denied. We asked for discovery to find out what other pronouncements the secretary had made to the intermediary, how the intermediary interpreted those, what the intermediaries did in similar positions, what the board did in similar
cases. But then the district court went on, though, and addressed the Sixth Circuit memorandum, didn't it?
It did.
It didn't. So you got a free opinion. Why do you want to file another complaint, get a second one?
Because, Your Honor, even though the district court did give a free opinion, we didn't like the opinion. We wanted to appeal that opinion to this court, and we wanted to make sure that this court would accept jurisdiction. It was unclear whether this court would accept that issue because we weren't sure if the district court's decision was a reviewable decision by this court. And that's why we filed the new civil action so that we could be sure that it got aired on the merits.
All right. Fair point.
So in both cases, you have a mandatory right of reopening, and that comes from, with respect to Baptist, that comes from both the Sixth Circuit Memorandum and 97-2. You have no administrative exhaustion remedies. That comes from In Re Medicare reimbursement and the Secretary's own concession. And then you have the equities in the hospital's favor. The Secretary has argued, again, that the delay should stop mandamus relief, but this court has already addressed that question and ruled in the hospital's favor in In Re Medicare reimbursement. And the Secretary also claims that it would be inequitable for the Secretary to have to pay these debts that it owes to hospitals other than the appellants, if there are any out there. And this court has already addressed that question as well, and it has declared that it is not inequitable to require the Secretary to pay a debt that it owes.
We say that that 97, we already said 97-2 was prospective only, didn't we?
Well, Your Honor.
In the Medicare reimbursement litigation?
I think the Secretary said that 97-2 was prospective only. You get the appeal provision of 97-2 that instructs the intermediaries, notwithstanding the reopening prohibition that the Secretary had put in place in 97-2, the appeal provision indicates that the intermediary is authorized to reopen, and as a result, the three-year window is tolled or doesn't apply.
I don't see how 97-2 helps you in terms of the issue here. It's 1885-B that controls this question. That's what drove the results in Monmouth and In Re Medicaid. It's 1885-B, and that's the one that has a three-year limit on it. So if it's beyond the three-year limit, 97-2 doesn't help you. Isn't that right?
If it was beyond the three-year limit and that limit wasn't told, then you would be right, Your Honor. But if you look at the regulations, 1885-B refers to 1885-A. That's where that three-year window comes. And in 1885-A, at least the 96 version, it refers to exceptions. Now remember, these are the reopening procedures, as the Secretary has declared.
Are you talking about the two exceptions in...
That's right.
But B and C don't cover your case.
No, they don't.
But
Your Honor, it indicates...
How does 1885A or B help you?
Because 1885 indicates that there are exceptions to the three-year
reopening. It has two exceptions.
The Secretary may impose, because these are just the Secretary's rules. So the appeal provision is yet another exception that the Secretary has imposed on the application of the three-year window.
Where is that? But that's not in 1885. 1885A, the intermediary may be reopened after. It says, except as provided. So if the except as provided in paragraph D and E. Now, if the Secretary is going to create another exception to 1885A, the Secretary has to put it in this regulation, right?
I don't think that it would, Your Honor, and that's evidenced by the Secretary propounding 97-2 as the new policy.
No, but 97-2 doesn't affect the three-year requirement of 1885 A and D, which is what Medicare, which is what the previous two cases were all about.
I would agree with you that it is not literal, and the
That's your problem.
And that is a problem.
I mean, this is a regulation, and it says there's two exceptions. And if the Secretary created a new exception and didn't put it in the regulation, I would think that would be a problem for the Secretary.
That might have also been.
Don't you think?
But the Secretary did the same thing with
not to follow his own regulation.
Your Honor, the Secretary, for example, the Secretary's payment regulation was changed by 97-2, a pronouncement. In this case, the Secretary's reopening regulation was likewise affected by the Secretary's pronouncement in the same manner. So the Secretary has claimed that this whole reopening process is by grace of the Secretary, and we contend that in 97-2, the Secretary amended those policies and procedures.
Look,
and included another exception.
Even if somehow the appeal provision does play the role you argue it does, which I'm not convinced it does. Even if it does, the sentence you rely on in the appeals provision ends with the phrase, "for purposes of resolving the appeal." So even that requires a pending appeal, which you didn't have at the time, right?
No, Your Honor, we did have a pending appeal at the time that 97-2 was issued. Both hospitals did. And that instruction, the appeal provision of 97-2, was interpreted as mandatory, notwithstanding the three-year window, by the intermediary, and that's in the intermediary's declaration that's included in the Secretary's first motion for summary judgment. But it's also consistent with the program memoranda that the Secretary sent out in the Sixth and Ninth Circuits. And in both of those cases, the Secretary instructed.
Did you have an appeal pending at the time you filed the mandamus here in the district court?
No, Your Honor. The appeal had been dismissed by that time.
Right.
So is your argument that 97-2, in fact, works an amendment of the regulations?
Yes, Your Honor.
But didn't we reject that reasoning in Monmouth? I mean, if that's the case, why didn't we follow that in Monmouth? In Monmouth, we said pre-existing regulation trumps 97-2.
Well,
but now you won't have it the other way.
In Monmouth, it went the other way. It said 97. It said the. Let's see.
As I recall, the argument in Monmouth was that 97-2 amended the regulation, and we said no, it didn't. We looked at the pre-existing regulation, and 97-2 can't mean what the parties argued it meant.
I think it may be the mirror image of that. What this court said in Monmouth was 97, the policy pronounced in 97-2, the mandate to include eligible days for future cases, would not be lawful because it wasn't promulgated by notice and comment rulemaking unless the prior regulation was unlawful, the regulation that prohibited the inclusion of eligible days. And since the old rule was unlawful, then the new rule announces a inconsistency with applicable law, which gives rise to an 1885B mandatory obligation, which the court then said would be inconsistent with the reopening prohibition found in 97-2, and so it struck the reopening prohibition in 97-2 because that was inconsistent with the mandatory obligation under 1885. I see that my time is about up, and if there are no further questions.
Questions? No. Thank you, Mr. Alderman.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Tom Weiss, counsel for St. Agnes. And I wanted to speak separately about St. Agnes partly because I think the history of the St. Agnes case in many ways illustrates something we all know about the history of the DSH adjustment, that it's been very difficult for the hospitals, no matter what they do, to receive the adjustment that Congress wanted to give them, going way back to the Good Samaritan case many, many years ago. What happened here is that St. Agnes started the attempt to get a proper DSH adjustment even before 97-2, and the issue that's before the court today, the status of the eligible days, was really the difference to this hospital between getting no DSH adjustment and getting a very substantial one. And one of the peculiarities about the St. Agnes experience is that back in the time that this was before the board, all of the figures were worked out so that we know from the record, from the allegations here, which are uncontradicted for purposes of this proceeding, that without the eligible days, the hospital had a 14.954% disproportionate patient percentage. But including the eligibles, they went to 15.0636%. And so that was the difference. And the irony there that has been called to the attention of many courts is that excluding the eligibles has the effect of saying, well, because you didn't get paid from the state Medicaid agency for these particular days, you lose the whole DSH adjustment, which, of course, was counter to the intent of the legislation in the first place, as all the courts that have considered the matter at the circuit level had held by the time of 97-2. So I think...
Did you make this point before the board?
Oh, before the board? Yeah, there was no hearing before the board, because what happened is that there was an appeal filed from the refusal to reopen the DSH adjustment. And then it sat before the board. It was assigned an appeal number, 1523. And there was then, and this is my next point, there was, in fact, a settlement. There was a written settlement between the intermediary and the hospital, which actually gave the hospital the right to a reopening. It says, we will reopen to compute the DSH adjustment. The disputed issue between the hospital and the intermediary at the time was the fact that there was disagreement about what the proper database to use for the patient information was. And if you look at that settlement agreement, which is at the Joint Appendix 381-382, you see that what they're focusing on is you don't have to use the Medi-Cal audited cost reports. Instead, you can use the Medi-Cal paid claim summary information. So that was the issue that had been an obstacle to the hospital getting its reopening. It was settled. Okay. Then, at that point, now this was several months after the publication of 97-2, and yet, when the hospital said, okay, here's all of our data, and it works out with the numbers that I just recited to the court, the 15.0636, the intermediary did not accept those eligible days. Okay. Then what happened? Then going to the board said, well, sorry about that, but we have your home nursing that says there's nothing we can do. So in 1999, shortly after your home came down, the board dismissed the case. So there we were. Now, the interesting thing is, in the Ninth Circuit, appeal from the denial of reopening was the law of the circuit. It was Oregon v. Bowen, a 1998 case in the Ninth Circuit. So when this started, Legacy Emanuel, the Ninth Circuit case that in 1996 decided the underlying issue. This was a jurisdictionally proper appeal.
Now, the government says in their brief that you didn't raise the Ninth Circuit case in the district court.
I'm sorry?
The government says that you didn't raise this Ninth Circuit argument in the district court, and you didn't respond to that in your reply brief.
Well,
so the government says this argument's waived, forfeited.
No. The point that I'm making here is that the appeal was jurisdictionally proper. This was a settled case before the board, and that's what brings us to 97-2. Our claim here is that under 97-2, properly interpreted and interpreted the way this court did in In Re Medicare, we were entitled, at the time of that reopening, to a calculation which was lawful. Now, it was lawful in the Ninth Circuit. Everybody knows the Ninth Circuit.
When the board issued this decision interpreting the settlement as well, why didn't you appeal that?
Well, the reason is that the board did not interpret the settlement. The board said, we read your home to say, we can't force the intermediary to do anything on this score. And that was, I think, the import of your home.
Was that decision appealable to the secretary?
I think that the board was correct that it, under your home,
The question is whether you could have appealed that decision to the secretary. You're saying
appeal to the secretary?
Yeah. Isn't that the next step after the board?
No. If the question is this a decision that could have gone to the district court, I think the district court would have faced exactly the same situation that this court addressed in Monmouth and In Re Medicare, that because of your home, you couldn't force the intermediary, the board could not force the intermediary to go ahead. Now, the only way that the district court could have gotten around that would be by the 1361 mandamus jurisdiction that we're invoking here. So I think that's the important point.
But you didn't
point.
Do it there.
So the point is we didn't have an APA claim at the district court level because of your home, because that's what changed Oregon v. Bowen's authority. Now, when this court in In Re Medicare, the district court here decided on very narrow grounds here and interpreted the clause that says may be included for purposes of settling jurisdictional proper appeals as being on the same level as new determinations. In other words, if you look at page 9 of the In Re Medicare decision, I think that is inconsistent with what the district court said here, namely that the may clause as to jurisdictionally proper appeal is not mandatory. But I think this court's decision in In Re Medicare said just the opposite at page 9. Now, I just wanted to mention one other thing. I don't know whether it affected the district court's decision in any way or not, but as I was looking yesterday at the record on page 411, I did notice that the court's opinion inserted an extra sentence in its quotation of the 97-2 explanatory text. And that, I think, I did want to point it out to the court because the way the court recited it, which deviates from the text, certainly destroys the obvious parallel language and I think confuses the authority of those two clauses. In other words, the way that this court recited it in the In Re Medicare opinion is the proper and logical way to consider it. That is, after 97-2 is issued, any recomputation of the DISH calculation has to be done legally, has to be done the way that both the 97-2 and all the circuits decided it should be done. And it wasn't here, and because this started out as an 1885 A appeal, we were caught in this no man's land of lack of jurisdiction to correct an obvious error that we think fits perfectly in the theory of Monmouth and In Re Medicare.
Wes, your time has expired. Are there further questions from Ms. Morris? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wes.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Christine Cole from the Department of Justice on behalf of Secretary Sebelius. The hospitals in this case have not satisfied any of the legal or equitable criteria that would warrant a grant of what's been called the drastic remedy of mandamus. Moreover, the circumstances of these two hospitals are dramatically different from the circumstances of the hospitals that were involved in both the Monmouth case and the Medicare reimbursement litigation. First of all, as Your Honors earlier recognized, the notices of program reimbursement that are at issue in this case are well beyond the three-year window that is specified in the Secretary's regulation in 405-1885B, and the hospitals really don't dispute that. And that regulation was at the heart of the decision, the two decisions of this court in Monmouth and Medicare reimbursement. That was the source of the mandatory duty that the court identified. A second extremely important distinguishing characteristic between these two hospital situations and that of the hospitals in the other two cases is the fact that they did indeed have alternative remedies. Baptist's counsel has conceded this morning that it had a pending appeal. In fact, its appeal was pending from 1994. It was filed 5 days after the Sixth Circuit's decision in the Jewish hospital case. It was filed in 1994, and it was still pending up until it was dismissed in, I believe it was February of 1998, and it was dismissed for want of prosecution. In that time period between 1994 and 1998, this so-called Sixth Circuit policy program memorandum was issued in October of 1994 while Baptist's appeal was pending before the board. But even more important, the ruling...
What's the significance of that? Why are you saying that? What is the relevance you're attributing to the issuance of the memorandum while the case was pending?
Well, the relevance is that there were things that these were issues that the hospital certainly could have raised during the four-year pendency of its appeal before the board. Then in February of 1997, that was when ruling 97-2 was issued. 6 months after that, Baptist Hospital received a reminder letter from the board saying, look, you've got your appeal pending, hint, 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 file your papers. There was no response to that. And then, as Baptist concedes, in February of 1998, that appeal was dismissed for want of prosecution. Nothing was done until 4 years after that, when Baptist filed the mandamus action that was here. So the notion that they did not have an alternative remedy or that there was something to reopen is just flatly wrong. There's nothing to reopen because they had already had an open proceeding. They had a forum in which to raise the argument that they were entitled to a DSH adjustment in the wake of the 97-2 ruling, in the wake of the four decisions of the other four circuits on the Secretary's interpretation. So they clearly had an alternative remedy, and mandamus simply doesn't exist as a way to bail out a litigant that has slept on its rights. Now, insofar as St. Agnes is concerned, they were in a similar situation. As their counsel conceded this morning, they had a pending open proceeding at the time of the 97-2 ruling. In May of 1995, they asked the intermediary to reopen their DSH, or their cost report, I think it was for fiscal year 1990, and to recalculate the DSH adjustment. Their own evidence in the record in the appendix, the page that Counsel for St. Agnes cited, shows this so-called letter. It's dated June 4th, 1997. That's 4 months after the ruling 97-2 was issued. And they never claimed that they didn't know anything about that. So that in that June 1997 letter, it clearly shows that the intermediary had agreed to reopen and reconsider their DSH adjustment. The letter also sets forth several of the conditions of that settlement. Condition number one states that the number of days of care to Medi-Cal patients to be included in the calculation will be based on paid days as evidence of remittance. So obviously during those negotiations and discussions, there was some focus of attention on the DSH adjustment. Condition number four on page 382 of the joint appendix says the provider will not contest through appeals or otherwise DSH payment that ultimately results from this ongoing reopening. So, yes, they ultimately were unhappy with how that was resolved. They didn't get the amount of money that St. Agnes thought it was entitled to, but that's quite beside the point. The point for mandamus is, did you have an alternate forum, an alternate opportunity in which to raise these issues?
Are you saying the settlement forum was that, or they could have sought further relief? Didn't the settlement preclude further appeal?
They could do both. I mean, they got the reopening, so the notion that they needed to have some reopening ordered is just completely illogical. They already had the reopening. It says that on the face of the letter. It says the intermediary will reopen the 1990 cost report, and that's in a letter dated 4 months after the 97-2 ruling. So they had that opportunity. In, I believe it was 1998, yes, it was when this was finally resolved in between the intermediary and St. Agnes, I think it was March of 1998. At that point, they pursued it, I guess, with the PRRB, the board, and the board ultimately dismissed their appeal for lack of jurisdiction. They could have pursued that to the secretary. They could have even tried to go into court at that point. But between 1999, when the board dismissed their appeal for lack of jurisdiction, they did nothing up until May of 2006. 7 years later, they then tried to jump on the bandwagon of Monmouth and Medicare reimbursement and try and shoehorn their situation into the situation of the hospitals in those cases. I'd also like to clear up some misstatements this morning that seem to suggest that the secretary did very little to resolve these hospitals' disputes after the In Re Medicare reimbursement litigation. As we point out in our brief, there were some 2,300 cost reports that were settled after that litigation. There were only three hospitals that did not settle, or three particular cost reports, and two of them are here this morning. So the secretary took great steps to comply with this court's decisions in those cases. I'd just like to conclude by again saying mandamus has been referred to by this court and others, the Supreme Court, as a drastic and extraordinary remedy. It doesn't exist to bail out a party that slept on its rights or to somehow correct the poor litigation choices that a litigant has made. So we ask that you affirm the district court's judgments in these two cases. Thank you.
Ms. Cole, any time left?
No time remaining for anyone of the
appellants. Judge Tatel, you want to hear?
I don't have any questions. No.
No questions?
No.
No questions? No questions? We'll give you 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
To rebut, not to restate.
Sure. St. Agnes had a settlement after 97-2. The intermediary was in charge of that settlement. They reopened, and they still didn't include eligible but unpaid days. We've heard a lot about what the hospitals didn't do.
Did you make that argument in the district court?
Pardon me?
So did you make that argument in the district court?
Yes, Your Honor.
You did?
Yes, Your Honor.
I thought you argued in the district court that 97-2 required reopening, not that once having reopened, they had to recalculate.
Well, what 97-2 says is reopening and recalculation. And that's
I was asking whether you made that argument in the district court.
I believe
the government
so.
Says you didn't.
Your Honor, that's not correct. And also, the meaning of the settlement agreement was never in question at the district court. This is a new argument raised on appeal by the secretary. This is a motion to dismiss, not a factual investigation into what this settlement agreement meant. What we do know is that there was a reopening in association with a settlement, and that the intermediary excluded eligible days despite 97-2, which demonstrates the secretary and the intermediary's attitude towards including eligible but unpaid days throughout this period of time. The secretary maintains that it has taken some action in response to this court's pronouncement in NRA Medicare reimbursement, but all they've done is address lawsuits that come to it. They have done nothing to find out what obligations remain for hospitals that haven't sued and to do what this court says they were obligated to do, which is to reopen and correct.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you,
Your Honor. Mr. Weiss, do you have anything you need to say?
Well, all I was going to do was to respond specifically to Judge Tatel's question. We did, I think, make this argument in substance and in fact at pages 31, 32 of the preliminary brief. And if I can...
You're making this point on behalf of St. Agnes now?
That's correct, Your Honor. And then in the final brief, this is the substance of the argument at pages 40 through 45, where we explain that once you reopen under the Medicare, under In Re Medicare, as well as under the text of 97-2, then eligible days are included, and that is certainly the interpretation which the In Re Medicare opinion of this court adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss. Thank you, all gentlemen. The case is submitted. Ms. Cole, thank you.